This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. One week after the election, questions still linger about the integrity of America's voting process, long lines at the polls, voter registration issues, provisional ballots, and concerns about electronic voting machines. If you have questions about what worked and what didn't, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@npr.org. And joining us now is Shelley Pingree, president of Common Cause. Very nice of you to join us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And also with us is Lily Coney, a senior analyst for the Electronic Privacy Information Center, and it's good of you to be with us.
Thank you.
Shelley, first, tell us about the role of Common Cause on Election Day and what problems you may have identified.
Well, Common Cause is a nonpartisan organization that's been around for almost 35 years, and we've always taken a great interest in how elections are conducted in this country and the right of every American to vote and to have their vote counted. We sponsored a voter alert line with a variety of groups and received over 200,000 calls on Election Day and the week leading up to it with a whole variety of questions people were posing and problems they were experiencing out there with from not receiving their absentee ballots, particularly in Broward County in Florida, registration problems, not having provisional ballots available to them when they went in to vote, long lines at the polling places, and voter intimidation in a variety of places. And from our perspective, you know, if this had been a 36,000 vote margin instead of 136 in Ohio, there were legions of lawyers ready to litigate all the things that went on in this country that didn't go well. And while we should applaud what did go right, we have to take a serious look at voting in this country, and does everyone eligible to vote get to vote, and is their vote counted?
Mm-hmm. Important issues that the Help of Voters Act was supposed to cure this time around.
Absolutely. Congress passed a law with the thought in mind that would fix the problems that we experienced in 2000 that frankly woke up America to all the things that had been going on. Unfortunately, they didn't provide sufficient funding. There's not equitable funding around the country. And in some things, like provisional ballots, they give so little direction to the states that, as you saw, there were a variety of ways that the provisional ballot rules were interpreted, and it clearly wasn't done fairly, and that just added to the many problems we already experience in this country.
Lily, you work with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Obviously, one of the big changes this time around was the increased usage of electronic voting machines. Did you monitor that progress? How did it go?
Yes, I coordinate a project for EPIC called the National Committee for Voting Integrity, and there are quite a few questions that remain following the November 2nd election. Elections are more than just about winners and losers, but the manner in which each ballot was managed. Many voters attempted to vote using absentee ballots. Some of those ballots were not, the ballots themselves were not delivered. We had ballots, once they were returned, were challenged as being illegitimate and so were not counted. Some poll location problems, not enough polling machines. In one locale in Ohio, there were two voting machines for over 10,000 registered voters. There were a number of provisional ballot issues, as Sherry mentioned, 24,000 provisional ballots were cast in Calahoga County, Ohio, when the majority of other precincts of polling counties in that state had only a couple of hundred ballots. But mm-hmm. that was the location of the Cleveland, Ohio. There were tabulation problems in Texas, Ohio, North Carolina, Florida, and Nebraska that affected smaller races down the ballot, but nothing great enough to have affected the overall outcome of the state elections that have been reported thus far. But, of course, the final results, the official results, won't be reported in counties and states until for another week or so as they look at their numbers and can reconcile what's being reported with actual evidence of the votes being cast.
Last time around, 4 years ago, we heard so much, obviously, about the difficulties in Florida, but there were obviously difficulties elsewhere. Florida came up because the vote was so close. It was so close that a lot of people said it was within the range of noise, where nobody could really tell, in fact, who had won. If the election had been that close again, Shelley Pingree, you've already said if the election was that close again, we would have had also as many problems. Is the window getting smaller? Are we reducing the number of problems? Or given the numbers who actually turned out to vote, many more than 4 years ago yesterday, was the problem even worse than it was 4 years ago?
You know, I think the problem was somewhat worse, and it's just, again, because we don't have a close margin and we don't have lawyers contesting it, that, in fact, the media, for the most part, just sort of shut down and said, okay, everything is fine. And election officials, you know, they pray for a landslide so that we don't have to go to recount, so that we don't have to look at these specific issues. And the challenge is, what would happen in a future election when you didn't have legions of election protection lawyers, of the press watching every move that's going on? You know, will we go back to the position that we've been in? We know for a fact that, as Lily was saying, there are long lines in places that don't have the resources and sometimes easy voting in the places that do. We started calling it the three-hour poll tax. You know, some people couldn't afford to stand in line for 3 hours, and in some places it was 6 hours or more. Those are inequities in this country that we absolutely have to fix, and we don't want to go under the delusion that the Help America Vote Act actually fixed that. We need to go back in and resolve those problems and also think about, you know, the structural problems of how we fund elections in this country and how we administer things like provisional ballots and voter registration.
And the idea, obviously, elections are one of those things that have always been controlled on local levels, and whether that's appropriate anymore.
Well, I think the one issue to consider is that red, white, and blue should describe our flag, but not voters after the elections process. There are too many hurdles, too many roadblocks to the ballot box for every voter in this country. We have situations in Iowa where voters thought they had voted absentee, may have left the state, will find a message on their voicemail, if they have one, telling them that their vote was challenged, and so their vote was not counted if they didn't go in by the close of election day to vote a provisional ballot. There are just too many opportunities for voters to have their right to vote taken away from them in ways that were not before are clearly communicated to voters so that they know that that can happen, that you can be challenged as a voter.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some callers in on this conversation, and we'll begin with John, who's calling from San Ramon, California.
Thank you so much for taking the call. I just wonder about the discrepancy between exit polling and actual vote results when it appears that there's just been such a huge discrepancy between something that is pretty much tamper-proof, since you know who voted and you know how they voted when they walk out of a polling place.
Exit polls are people asking people how they voted after they voted, which is not necessarily the same thing. But let me ask Lily Coney and Shelley Pingree to respond to that. Exit polls early on did show that Senator Kerry was doing rather better than he turned out to do.
I think the exit poll question has, if you look at an exit poll, it's more or less like a snapshot in time. At one particular point, it may show voters voting by 10 a.m. in the morning, and at that particular point in time, there may have been an advantage for Senator Kerry. But by the close of the election, looking at the final results of all the exit polls that were conducted, what do those results show? I think that there's still some question about what time of day we're looking at when we look at particular exit poll data.
And Lily Coney? That was Lily Coney. Shelley Pingree.
Yeah, and I know if you've been reading the internet this week and the bloggers, and people are raising this question over and over again, and I think it is important both to determine whether there was a discrepancy between exit polling and the machines based on the fact that machines weren't recording or they were tampered with, or all the questions that people are raising. And we did a little bit of exit polling ourselves in Ohio, and I know other organizations are trying to look at their data now to see what that says. But the other side of it is, I think this reflects a tremendous concern about the new electronic voting machines, about the punch card machines that were still used in Ohio that many voters find confusing and still have problems and really need to be replaced. I think it's just part of a litany of questions that are raised about our election. And there's one thing we want to be sure when the election is over, is that we can say whoever won fair and square, that every voter who wanted to vote got that chance to vote, that every vote was counted. And while, we don't want to get this into the sort of, you know, sore losers, are people still angry because they feel the vote was stolen, I think we really have to feel confident in this country that we have elections that are conducted fairly. So we have to respect the many questions that people are raising right now. And the reason they want to keep it in the public eye is really more about small-d democracy.
Shelley Pingree,
can I follow up on
Hold on just a second, John. I just want to ask Shelley Pingree particularly. There are allegations, as you mentioned, on the internet that the electronic votes were hacked. Have you seen any evidence of that?
Well, we saw, in the calls that we got a tremendous, well, I won't say a tremendous, but we got a significant number of calls from people who said, when I put my finger on the button that was voting for one candidate, it showed the other candidate. We called people back. We talked it through with people. I really do think that many of the groups, particularly that work on electronic voting issues, are thinking about whether they should impound some of these machines. You know, it is a new technology, and while none of us want to be Luddites, we want to have, a technology that works well for all people, that's easy to cast your ballot, we also want to have, some way to verify it, some way to answer these questions. And again, so when you have this sort of flood of questions going on, people can say, without a doubt, we trust the science, we trust the machinery and equipment, and I think this is one election where we need to sort that out. We send election observers all over America, and Jimmy Carter said that this country couldn't be certified to have election observers to come in, and many of it is because of the way we conduct our voting in this country.
We're talking about the mechanics of voting last Tuesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And John from San Ramon, were you trying to get back in? I'm sorry.
Just one last comment. Thank you very much. I mean, I would think that the voting information provided to the advisors of the president, like Karen Hughes, would be tremendously reliable. And as I understand from the bloggers, she had sat President Bush down and explained to him that he had lost in a landslide in Florida and that he had a stoic expression about it. And then later on, she and he were able to say that didn't happen. So I just don't understand how there can be such a discrepancy at that high a level. Maybe at an individual level.
John, I should explain that I think 4 years ago, the initial wave, that first wave of exit polls showed Mr. Bush winning by, I think, better than 2 percentage points, 2%. And, of course, that didn't happen either.
Well, I think that this is Lily County. I think what we're getting back to is why there is a need for a voter verifiable audit capacity for voting. Now that we're looking at having, for instance, state Florida voting electronic in some counties on optical scan in other counties, if there are any questions about what took place on Election Day, we need to be able to go back and see that and be able to verify the results. And you're not able to do that on paperless DRE voting machines.
Let's get another caller on the line. Rennie is with us from Burlingame, California.
Yeah, and I'm actually following kind of on the same thing that the last guy said.
Mm-hmm.
You want an extra line?
Go ahead, Rennie. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I'm following kind of on the same thing the last guy said, which was about the voting machine discrepancy. I guess there was an incident in Broward County where the voting machines were actually counting backwards.
Yes, that's correct. This is Lily. That is correct. That did happen.
And is that significant, Lily?
Yes, in the fact, a couple of reasons. One, this particular problem with counting the optical scan ballots had been detected 2 years before, but never corrected. Basically, the limit was 32,000 vote counting capacity on this ESNS absentee ballot tabulation software. When it by the end of the evening on an amendment dealing with slot machines, it showed a 166,000 margin of victory in Broward County. But after they looked at the end of the tabulation, it showed some anomalies. They went back and checked. They found the error, and it ended up being a 240,000 vote margin of victory for that amendment. So this kind of problem, these kinds of errors are the reasons why technologists have been very focused on getting a voter verifiable audit capacity in these machines. This isn't just about DRE paperless voting machines. It's also the ability to look at how optical scan software is tabulating our results.
I was going to point out that the optical scan is different from the electronic voting.
Right.
There is a paper trail, and you say
is a paper trail, they were able to go back and they knew something was wrong by what they had been observing, and they were able to go back and make a correction, retabulate the results, and get the correct total. But without that audit capacity, any questions are just left out there for our historians to review. I mean, we are still looking at the unofficial results in all of the states that reported returns on the evening of November 2nd. Counties and states over the next couple of weeks will be looking at those numbers to try to make them reconcile with what they think happened on Election Day. When they certify those results, regardless of what we think or regardless of what may be found later, those will be the official results.
Rennie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And briefly, we just have a few, very few seconds left. Shelley Pingree, do you think that this trail, this paper trail, that's going to be the primary reform issue over the next 4 years?
I think paper trails are one important piece. But again, I think that, you know, the questions raised over provisional ballots, the voter lists in this country, the ID requirements, many of the things that were changed during the Help America Vote Act, but then also fully funding and funding in an equitable way is a huge concern, because there were people who stood in long lines and other people who didn't.
Shelley Pingree is the president of Common Cause. Thank you very much. And also our thanks to Lily Coney, senior policy analyst with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.